Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast, Growlin'. Paul Ehner Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here with you. We're not hungover or anything. We just had a couple of nice, you know, end of draft cocktails. Woodford Reserve Double Oak ended up being my drink of choice for the best drink of the year this year. But we're doing good. Are you doing good, Jay?
I'm doing great. I'm just starting on my 2022 mock draft.
Don't do it.
I'm
Don't
not.
Don't do it. Derek Stingley Jr. All right. So we have a special one for you today. We did this last year, and it's one of my favorite things to do is to, we're going to have Director of College Scouting for the Bengals, Mike Potts, as our guest. And we're going to talk through the draft. We're going to talk through the players. We're going to talk through the scenarios. We're going to talk through the scouting that went into this entire draft, who he saw, where he saw them, some of the freakiness, some of the things that sold, and some of the things that were happening up until the final hours before the draft. It was a really fun conversation that I had with Mike, and I figured, you know what, might as well just share the whole thing with everybody. Why wouldn't we? And really, their whole staff, they put in so much work all year round. That's from Duke Tobin to Bill Tobin to Steven Radicevic on the pro side, also does a lot of college work, obviously, too, and Mike Potts, Andrew Johnson, Christian Sarkisian, their whole group over there does so much behind the scenes, and you don't hear from them, and they deserve a lot of credit for a lot of what happened this past weekend. And Mike was so kind as to join me. So I know you, Jay, these guys are invaluable, and the Bengals staff, they people like to take shots at the size of the scouting staff, but that just makes it even more impressive what these guys actually do.
Yeah, and I mean, they do more work than most because of that. But then especially when you look at this year where they had to do so much more work because you can't get to these guys. So it's a lot of film grinding, and it's a lot more when you're vetting these guys and you're talking to strength and conditioning coaches and high school coaches. And I mean, you don't just get all of those guys together at a pro day. You're doing this over the phone, over Zooms. So way more in depth, process this year. And yeah, they are. I think fans will really enjoy this because it's a voice or voices that you don't typically hear from a lot. And they are so important into this whole process of leading up to the draft. And then even beyond that, the advanced scouting and all the work they do in that regard.
You know whose voices you do hear a lot in the lead up to the draft? Ours.
They need a break.
That's why we kind of thought, you know what you don't need to hear any more of, especially after the last 3 days. You can go back and listen to the day one, day two, and final day three draft recaps are all up if you want to hear us talking about the draft and the players and our opinions or what all you want. All of that, it's there for you if you want to read what we wrote. Jay, you've got the roster projection is up for the year. I've got the story on the offensive line and what happened over the last 5 months and what it looks like now. We've got all the picks from the weekend. I mean, there's so much stuff up on the site. Across the Dane Brugler's got his reviews. I mean, you just go on to The Athletic right now. It's insane the amount of content that is up there. All of that is there if you want it. But we wanted to bring you inside the Bengals scouting department. And that's why we have this conversation for you. So without further ado, I will bring in Bengals Director of College Scouting, Mike Potts.
All right, I'm excited to do this again this year. You know, it's one thing that I really enjoy doing is having a chance to talk to the people that spend all year grinding behind the scenes for this, really specifically for this one big weekend, and get to see all their work kind of pay off about everything that's been happening, because they're finally allowed to tell us the truth of what was happening, because everything else has to be under lock and key before that. So that's why I'm excited to bring in Mike Potts, Bengals Director of College Scouting. Mike, how's it going?
It's going well, Paul. I appreciate you having me. Always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah. First of all, congrats to everybody on the staff over there. I mean, from Duke all the way down, I don't know that people truly understand how much work goes in all year round, and this was harder than ever. How did it grind on you a little bit more, being a little bit more of a challenging year?
Yeah, it was a unique year. I mean, I'm really proud of our guys. You mentioned Duke, Steve Radicevic, Bill Tobin, Andrew Johnson, Christian Sarkisian. You know, those guys really do a lot of grinding behind the scenes that, you know, maybe goes unnoticed sometimes. And it was an extremely unique year. You're always looking to fill in all the boxes on these guys, and there was just so many different parts about this process, from not being able to even go into normal school visits during the fall and see practice, to no combine, to limited medical information on these guys. So we really had, our scouting staff really had to go the extra mile this year to be able to develop a conviction on the guys that we targeted on draft day. So I can't say enough good things about those guys and all the work they put in.
How late into the process was info still coming in, specifically injury stuff? I mean, we've heard reports that it was up to the last hours. I mean, was that the case on people? And was stuff changing on your board because of late info up into the final hours even?
Absolutely. Those reports, I don't know if all reports out there are true, but those reports are certainly true. up until the day of the draft, we were still getting medical info. You know, the scans and x-rays and you know, the different medical tests that they do on hearts and you know, brain, everything like that. You know, there was different rates that they were coming in and getting to our doctors and our trainers, and those guys did a great job of really, really working hard to make that as an efficient of a process as they could. And but yeah, there were certainly tweaks that we had to make all the way up until draft day with guys, you know, just determining whether they were safe bet or not medically.
What, were you guys just having to play it safe a little bit, where if it felt inconclusive on the medicals, those guys just maybe more so than in any year, you had to just kind of toss some names out off the board, just where maybe most years you just dig deeper or have some better information, whereas this year you just kind of had to just kind of toss some names?
Yeah, I mean, the doctors didn't get their hands on as many guys as they would have if you know, there was the full combine. So we do try to put a firm grade on everybody, but there's certainly, you know, you use the word inconclusive. There definitely was less confidence that we had in some guys, maybe more so than others, that the doctors actually got their hands on. I think it was 150 guys that ended up actually going to Indy. So, you know, maybe we had a little bit more information medically on those guys, but it was there definitely was some uncertainty there.
How many pro days did you end up going to?
Oh man, off the top of my head, I'd have to bring it up.
Was it less than normal because of the limits of, you know, travel a little bit?
It was about, let me think through it. I want to say it was about 10 to 12 in that range. So yeah, it was probably a little bit less just because of the limitations. We could only have three people at each school for these pro days, you know, scouts and coaches included. So, and then there was also places that would only allow one person from an organization into their pro day, you know, just everywhere was different with COVID restrictions in that state or county. So, yeah, it definitely limited us some, but we just had to do some more work over the phones or on Zoom, you know, to get the proper exposure to the players and you know, make sure we felt good about our evaluations.
Well, it doesn't matter anymore because all the best players only play at the same six schools in college football anymore, Mike. So.
we surely took some players from those schools that have been really successful recently. We obviously like guys from winning programs, guys that have played at a high level and played in big games and played big in the biggest moments. So that means a lot to us.
Well, it's funny. I mean, we see a lot of teams talking about themes coming out of, oh, you know, they took all these guys from this school or that school. I'm like, well, yeah, that's because that's what there's so much of college football has conglomerated to, like, these, you know, the Alabamas and the LSUs and the Clemsons and the Ohio States of the world. I mean, look at how many people are getting drafted from these schools every year. It's just there's such so much that's just centered into these schools that you go in there, and if you've got good intel and contacts at any of those schools, it can really pay off for you.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, you look at the past 2 years in the first round, we've taken guys from the same two schools, first and second round. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel really good about the contacts we've developed on our personnel staff at some of those major schools, especially, and even some of the small schools. So, you know, especially in a year like this, you have to really know that you can trust the people that you're talking to and that they're giving you accurate information. And then you can make the right choice on draft day, as opposed to some watered down version that maybe you're not getting the full truth there. So, like I said, I'm proud of our staff and the connections that we've made and the contacts. And I feel like we got some really good information behind the scenes on the character, medical and, you know, just the football intelligence and football character as well. Yeah. On the guys that we drafted.
Let's start with scouting, Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, obviously, because you scouted Joe Burrow and you were at those, you know, we talked last year about the Alabama LSU game in Clemson, which the Alabama LSU game in Tuscaloosa. But I think you were talking about how, I mean, we have to go back and look at how many drafted players and first and second round players were on the field that day. But I mean, you know, he's one of them there. But what you were familiar with him, but what did you learn kind of going back into the process and really studying him this year that set him apart?
Honestly, I knew about him going into, I think I told you last year when we were talking about Burrow, going into the Vanderbilt game that was the first game that year in the 2019 season that I saw LSU live. And, you know, there was, last year was the best wide receiver class I can ever remember. I've been doing this 10 years now, and last year's receiver class was phenomenal. But, you know, I left that Vanderbilt game just thinking to myself and talking to some other scouts that were there. I'm like, wow, you know, there's a ton of really good receivers in the country, but the best one is right here at LSU, and he can't even enter this year's draft class because he's a true sophomore. I want to say he had almost 230 yards in that game, 10 catches, like 4 touchdowns. And it was just an extremely impressive performance. So that sticks with you. And then, yeah, you go to the Alabama game that you mentioned that was there live. And on the first series of the game, I want to say he has that big touchdown down the right sideline on a go ball against Diggs, who ended up starting this year for the Cowboys. But, you know, so we've obviously seen all of the balls that were throwing Ja'Marr Chase's way throughout his career, just doing all the work that we did on Joe last year. But then going back and really focusing on him, he stands out even more, just how explosive he is, how dynamic he is with the ball in his hands, how physical he is. You know, it's an impressive combination of traits that he has. And then when you really, like I said, we've developed a lot of good contacts down there at LSU, obviously. And I feel like I know a ton of guys really well on their staff. And just when you dig into how much this kid loves football and how much he ended up opting out, obviously, but it just how much it really killed him to have to watch his teammates play on Saturdays this year and miss out on that. You know, every guy that didn't play this year, you know, obviously has their own reasons that we respect. But, you know, I think it meant a lot to him to miss that he really missed playing, and everybody you talk to there just talks about how much he loves the game. So you know, it was a lot of things that we already knew through watching the run LSU had in 2019, but I think it just magnified him when we really focused in on him in 2020, and then talking to all the people that know him as well.
I mean, you also get a guy who then goes out at his pro day. Did you go to the pro day, or was that?
I was actually at Florida. It was the same day.
So you were at Florida with Zach, and then Duke was at LSU.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, then he has this pro day. Because that was really – how much were you interested in the pro days for the opt-out guys this year to see specifically, like, did they take it serious? Did they take care of themselves? Did they make sure they were ready? Was that a big part too? Because then Chase comes out and answers those questions in a big way at his pro day, and I wonder how much of effect that had to tipping the scales toward him too.
It meant a ton. It meant a ton. You know, obviously, you see – you evaluate him on tape and you see what his play speed is. You kind of have – estimates that the staff gave you on his 40 time, his height, weight, you know, shuttle time, jumps, things like that. You know, let's be honest, this guy, his tape was so phenomenal in 2019 that he probably couldn't have pushed, he probably could have went out and not pushed himself as hard as he did over this 2020 season and training for the pro day and still been a top 10 pick. But he went out for him to go out and just dominate his pro day. I've got a couple coaches down there that I trust that said, you know, if you had any hesitation on us telling you how much this kid loves football and how much drive he has to him, I think he obviously answered those questions and gave you the proof there with how well he did at the pro day. I mean, he blew it up, and it was extremely impressive, and it makes you feel good that he was football is really important to him, and you know, he was working extremely hard to prepare for that day.
I mean, while we're talking about freaky pro days, you went to Florida. Like, what mm-hmm. is it like to watch Kyle Pitts do what he was doing? I mean, that's just unreal stuff.
Unreal, yeah. I mean, we don't like to throw around the word rare too often, because I feel like that needs to be reserved for unique, you know, high end players. But I mean, he's about as unique as it gets. I had already seen him multiple times in person, but you know, for him to just kind of verify the movement and athleticism at that pro day was like you said, freaky and rare. I mean, there's a lot of words you could use to describe him and you know, a few other guys in this draft class as well. There was some really, really high end talent, we thought, at the top of the draft.
Yeah, I he's going to be a fun guy to see how he plays for Atlanta and wherever, you know, his entire career, just because it's like you only get guys like this so often that take you out of even defining what the position even means, you know, because there's like Florida calling him the unicorn. I mean, it's like you got to almost rethink offense as a whole when you have somebody like that at your disposal.
Absolutely. And as you know, I worked in Atlanta before coming to Cincinnati, and you know, those guys were ecstatic about getting Kyle. You know, I think they thought he was one of, if not the best player in the draft, and they were extremely excited. So there was a lot of texts and phone calls between myself and those guys, just congratulating them on that pick. And he's a heck of a player. I'm looking forward to watching him.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah.
what is the Burrow factor? I mean, and obviously, you know, you factor in the comfort that you know Joe has throwing to him, but also I was kind of curious along these lines. Like, does when you have somebody like Joe, who isn't just someone who was his quarterback, but is the leader of your team now, and like so much the voice of your team, and garnered so much respect at LSU, does it make Ja'Marr Chase a more predictable evaluation? Because you really do feel like with Joe here, it just ups the chances you're going to get the most out of Ja'Marr Chase when he does come here, because you know you have him and Joe together, and the respect that there is there in that, in the work factor, in that, you know, Joe's going to be working extra all the time, and if Jamar's doing that too, he's more able and more likely to do that when you know a guy like Joe's kind of leading the way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly a factor. That's well said. You know, the way you put that, I don't think Ja'Marr is going to want to let Joe down. I think he's going to come in and be motivated to prove that they can put the same numbers up that they did in college at LSU, that they can do some of the similar things here in the NFL. You've got the comfort level with, you know, Joe coming off of the injury. So, you know, who knows how much time he gets, how much work he gets physically in the off season with the receivers. So they already have that chemistry, obviously. And then as far as him picking up our playbook and all that, you know, we've got a lot of similar concepts and similar terminology. And, you know, maybe if there is a mix up, Joe can, tell Ja'Marr, like, hey, this is what we used to call this. And you know, you've got that comfort level there, that chemistry. And I think it would never be the main factor on why we take a guy, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And, you know, I'm glad that we've got that going for us.
Considering the elite prospects here, I mean, it's really because you have two, obviously, you know, the big three that were out there with Sewell and Chase and Pitts. You have two premier positions, but the, you know, debate out there about how, you know, what's the most important in building a team in today's modern game. And then you have the tight end, which has constantly been devalued in this freak guy. How much did you guys find yourself in the room discussing philosophical, like big picture philosophical things about the direction of the NFL is going when trying to decide amongst some of these top elite guys? Because it just seemed like you guys were in such a unique position where it's like there was a lot of that, like how you view where the game is going almost was a part of the conversation about how you maybe would view who to take here.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great point. To answer your question, there's a ton of conversation on not only that, but obviously every other possible angle that you could evaluate this choice from. You know, whether it's do we trade, whether it's do we trade back, do we trade up, if we trade, how far do we go? You know, you had some unique players that can really. We think Ja'Marr can, you know, transcend our offense and put it where we want it to be. Obviously, you mentioned Pitts and Sewell. We think those guys would have been phenomenal players for us as well. It was a good spot for us to be in, where you know you're going to get a really good player. We just determined from the individual evaluation of Ja'Marr, we thought he was the best fit for us. And then also you have to trust your draft board. You evaluate probably, you know, I don't even know the exact number of guys we have reports on, but it's probably somewhere around 1,000, give or take. And obviously that gets pared down a ton, but you know, you evaluate all these guys, you put your draft board together, you continue tweaking it, like I said, all the way up until the day of the draft, even this year. And you have to trust what positions are heavy, what positions are light, where, you know, we ran through a million different scenarios of, you know, if we take this guy here, can we get this guy here? Can we get this guy maybe in the third round? So, you know, that's a long way of answering your question as far as, yeah, the way the game's headed, the way this draft is, you know, plays out, you know, who can be the best player for us, not only in the future, but this year, give us a chance to be the best team this season. There was just so many. You know, we would need a lot longer time than this podcast to discuss all the scenarios that we threw out there.
Well, I mean, it's funny because people, Bengals fans would talk to me about stuff like that and about how the debate, and it was, you know, the Bengals Civil War of fans were on this side or that side or this. And I'm like, you think you guys are grinding over this? Imagine being the people responsible in the room. That's what, and how much that must have just been like wearing on you guys trying to talk through that, because, you know, it's just, it's, there's so many different ways, and there was no bad answer. And that was really, to me, at the end of the day, like I thought that that, like you said, there was just these, when there, you have these premier guys, there's no wrong answer. It's a matter of best path in the big picture, I guess. And that, obviously it seems like that's where you guys netted out on it too.
Yeah, I think that was certainly part of it. We look, any time you take a guy and you're projecting, you know, this guy may be there, it's in the second, third round, whatever it is, it's a risk. You know, we've got certain guys that we targeted, and you don't know for sure that they're going to be there. But when you've got a group of guys that you think may be there in the next round, I think it played out well for us the way that it did play out. There were certainly some receivers we could have targeted later on. A lot of them ended up going before we would have had a chance to take them. So, you know, you go through the scenario of trading up from the second round or trading up from the third round, and you know, I'm just happy with the way it played out. I know a lot was made publicly about the depth of certain positions. When you really dial in on these guys, there's probably a lot, you know, medically or character wise that isn't out there publicly that maybe would ding guys on certain teams' draft boards and move them down or even up in certain cases. So you know, it maybe was a little bit different at certain spots than it was perceived to be publicly, but with the way our board played out, you know, we thought that was the best path to take. And on top of that, we thought Jamar was, you know, just from an individual assessment of him, we thought he was the best player for us.
Well, you look, I think it was 11 of 30 picks, something like that, were offensive linemen between your two picks. You know, I mean, it's like they were just flying off the board. And that was kind of exactly what the thought was that the big group would be there, where there's a lot of guys that you could choose from. Carmen in particular, what stood out to you about him? What made him the guy in that spot?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it all the time, just the division we play in and how much of a big man's division it is. We need big, physical, athletic guys, and that's what Jackson Carmen is. You know, he's going to be going from blocking for the number one pick in this year's draft to the number one pick from last year's draft, and he's done it at a high level there at left tackle. We think he's got tackle and guard flexibility. He's a violent player. That's what stands out to me. When we went through our meetings, he's been a guy that, since we first met back in January, he was a guy that we really had targeted, you know, as like I said, a potential guard or tackle option. But the physicality stands out, the athleticism stands out, and he had the minor back procedure that he had after the year, and I don't know if this is out there publicly or not, but he was playing through that the second half of the year, I think at least the last five games. Mm-hmm. So that gives us confidence that he's going to, there's more there than even what he showed on tape. And his tape was extremely impressive in our opinions. There was every reason in the world that he could have used that injury to opt out, like a lot of guys did. But if you have a question about this guy's toughness, his love for football and the drive that he has, it's similar to what I was saying about Jamar Chase and the way he proved with how he blew up his pro day. This guy easily could have tapped out and went and, you know, had the back procedure mid-season and you know, went and trained for the draft. But he fought through it with his teammates. You know, he ended up playing in some big games. They obviously went to the playoffs, and that gives you a level of comfort when you draft a guy like that and you know that's what he fought through during this past season.
Yeah, I mean, is that you guys made the decision to trade back there from 38, and you end up, you know, watching as all of a sudden everyone else in the whole league decides to trade too? I mean, it was an insane hour I'm curious what that hour was like for you guys, because you have the guys obviously circled and underlined that you want, and you're hoping that whoever's going to slip, and now everyone's coming up and people are doing things, and all these, and these offensive linemen are going off. I'm curious what that's like stress level wise for you guys that time in between 38 and 46.
Yeah, it's pretty hectic. You've got guys that you have targeted. At the same time, you've done all the work up until that point, and you've got the board right in front of you, and you let it play out. You know, if you know, a couple of the guys that we had targeted maybe would have went, maybe we would have had to make a move back up. But we felt pretty good with Jackson, a guy that we were targeting there. We felt pretty good that he would be there at 46. And again, he, like I talked about before, you don't move back unless there's a group of guys that you would be comfortable with there. And then there was numerous trade conversations we had. There was some interest in moving up to that pick 38. You know, talks with a number of teams, and we went back and forth with New England a couple times, and then once we threw out the scenario to get the 2 fourth-round picks, we just thought it was too good of a deal for us to pass up, and then ended up working out, and we got the guy that we targeted back there at 46, as well as I believe 2 other really talented players there in that deal with the 2 additional fourth-round picks.
Yeah, I mean, it really did. It just opened up the weekend for you guys. I mean, and it allowed you guys to do a lot of different things on day 3 and check a whole lot of boxes and double up at a number of different spots and make sure you got the kicker you wanted. And you know, you're able to still get the running back. It just seemed like, you know, was that something that from the very beginning you guys kind of looked at and said, yeah, I think, you know, let's plan for something like that to happen, be ready for a big day 3, even though it's not right now, because it just feels like it's setting up that way for that to be a good thing to do? Or was that something that, I'm not going to say took you by surprise at all, but that kind of, you know, wasn't as much like a set in stone plan?
It's one of the scenarios that we felt the best about when we were discussing, you know, when we set the initial board, probably a couple weeks before the draft. And then, you know, you never know how it's going to play out. You see how the first 32 picks in the first round end up playing out. And then, you know, like we talked about before the call, we're up early on the second day of the draft, and you know, you're texting and calling buddies around the league, you know, just about different interest levels, you know, moving up, moving back at that spot. And like I said, there was a lot of interest, and you know, that was a scenario that we felt good about as a possibility, you know, leading up to the draft weeks before. And then, you know, once we saw how much interest was there and the grouping of guys that we would be comfortable with if we slid back a little bit, I don't think we wanted to slide back too far, because, you know, there's not maybe a group of 10 to 15 guys you feel good about with that pick. But I don't have the draft board in front of me to give you an exact number of the grouping of guys we would have felt good about, but you know, you move back, you feel like you can get a really good player, and then I think it's a no-brainer when you get the 2 additional fourth-round picks and guys that, you know, are potential starters or guys that can develop into starters down the line for you. So it went from a possibility and something that we felt good about to a no-brainer, you know, once the final trade offer that we felt best about came through.
Yeah. What is that number? I'm like, not exactly this time, but like if you go back 8 picks, do you need to see 4 comfortable? Is it like a half? Do you need 50% of the space? Like, how do you guys judge that? Or do you need 8? You need to say, hey, we feel comfortable about 8 guys? Or how do you typically judge that when you know, any of the many, many offers come in over the course of a weekend?
We have 8 just for absolute worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But you look at team needs, you look at what they've already addressed in the first round position wise. So that lowers the likelihood maybe that they're going to take the position that you target. So there's a lot of analysis that goes into it, and it can't all happen in real time. It happens leading up, you know, in the days and weeks leading up to the draft, and then it happens all day on that day 2 of the draft to prepare for that scenario. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's hard in every scenario to put an exact number, you know, a percentage, 50, 75%, whatever it is. But In that scenario, we did a lot of research on the teams that were there, and we had a grouping of guys that we felt good about. But to answer your question, yeah, we had eight guys, you know, just to prepare for that worst case scenario. But we felt good about getting one of our top guys.
Yeah, Osai out of Texas in the third round. Obviously, everybody starts talking about his effort. Is that when you guys started with him, was that kind of some of the draw there? Was just, man, this is a guy who's just going to give you that relentless effort that's going to, you know, just be kind of contagious?
Absolutely. That's a good word, contagious, in that room. We've got a lot of high effort, high motor guys, play with you know, a lot of physicality and urgency. And that's what this guy is. I'm really happy that we got him. He's explosive. I'm sure you saw the pro day numbers, 41.5-inch vertical jump, 10-11 broad jump, ran fast. He's extremely long. Like I said, plays physical, and he's going to be disruptive. You know, hopefully he has a high sack number for us, but even if not, I think you can count on him moving the quarterback off his spot, and then we've got other guys that can come in and clean it up as well. So I think it's a good combination, the element that he adds to our room, I'm glad that we were able to address that position, and he's a player that we targeted going into the draft.
Yeah, I mean he's a lot. There were a lot of edges this year. It seemed like. That did it feel that way for you, where like there was just kind of like the offensive linemen in that group where all the, whatever it was, 11 go off in the 30 picks. I mean, it seemed like there were a lot of edges where maybe there wasn't obviously the high end this year, but the quantity of it maybe fit you guys better.
Absolutely. That's one of the spots that we really liked at depth going into it. There was a number of guys in that second, third, fourth, even late with Wyatt Hubert, to get him in the seventh round. I mean, it's unbelievable, in my opinion. So there was a ton of depth, we thought, at that position, more so than some others maybe. So we knew that was a spot that we wanted to address. It was just a matter of how the board played out and the value in certain rounds.
Sample too. I mean, Cameron Sample out of Tulane.
Absolutely.
Same thing, right? Has that same kind of. We're noticing this. That's that common thread. Is that something that was kind of stated at the beginning of the offseason at all? Of like, let's try to find more of that kind of relentlessness out of some of our guys.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned with our division, you want to create an identity, and we want physical, urgent, tough, high effort, high energy guys, that are bringing energy into the building during the week and on game day, guys that play hard, and I think we did a good job of addressing that in this draft and also in free agency as well prior to the draft. There's a certain brand of player that we want. We've had like I mentioned with some of the discussions leading up to the draft, there's a ton of discussions on scenarios, and then there's a ton of discussions on just what do we want this team to look like? What brand of player do we want? And I think we came away with a lot of guys that fit that mold.
Do you play the game of watching guys that you wanted but didn't get, and watching them closely on Sundays like this year as you watch games? Is that too frustrating?
You always watch guys that you scouted. You want to. As a scout, you want to evaluate yourself and see how guys are playing in the league, and maybe you're a little high on a guy, maybe you're a little too low on another guy, maybe you hit another guy perfectly right, according to how he's playing in the league. Now, obviously, everybody's in different scenarios, different systems schematically, depending on the coach that they're playing for. Or the teammates that they're playing with. So, everything's not an even playing field in that regard. But for sure, when there's guys that you spend a lot of time scouting and getting to know, both as a player and their background and their character, you spend a lot of time on these guys. So you want to, evaluate yourself, number one, but then also you've invested a lot of time in a lot of these players, and you want to see how they do in the league. And then, maybe there's a chance down the line that you can acquire them, whether it's on their second contract or if they, if it doesn't work out somewhere and they get waived, maybe you can pick them up on waivers or as a street free agent. So That's something that I always do. I mean, most of my time during the fall is spent evaluating college players, but certainly always watching around the league on Sundays for, you know, to see how guys are doing that I scouted coming out.
Maybe the most, one of the more surprising picks just based on position, was Tyler Shelvin. You know, you guys, you have Reeder there and Tupou and Ronnell Wren. But what was it? Was that just a matter of like, we just can't, like this guy can be too good. We're just not going to let this guy go by. Is that kind of the basics of why you guys liked him so much?
Yeah, for sure. Like I mentioned, when you pick up those extra fourth round picks and you've got a guy that is still sitting there that you think can be a high end player in what he does in terms of stuffing the run, first and foremost, he does some elite things in the run game. Obviously we didn't get to see it this past year with the opt out situation, but when you go back to 2019, that guy's hard to move, can take on double teams and even triple teams. And again, I don't want to sound like a broken record talking about our division, but it is a physical division where we need these big bodies to stop the run game. We needed to beef up that line of scrimmage. I know we have DJ, who's an excellent nose tackle, but you can't have too many guys that are big and physical in there on the interior. And then I think we did a good job of complementing that with guys that have a little bit more pass rush to them as well. So we just thought at that point in the draft, for that guy to still be there, you know, a guy, we thought he was a guy that can come in and have a real impact on our defensive line, and we're glad that we got him where we did.
Is this a too simplified analysis to just say you guys kind of learned that lesson last year? I know Zach said with us on Saturday night, I didn't want to go through that again, a year of picking guys up off the street in week 12 and week 13 and, you know, all year really, it seemed like, in the trenches. Was that just kind of a lesson learned of last year, you know, sort of a adjustment in focusing on that and focusing so much on just looking more the part in the AFC North?
Yeah, there was some of that, but then some of it is also just the individual evaluation of Tyler Shelvin. I mean, he does some unique things now. You know, he's not just, you know, it's not just, oh, we moved down and he was our next nose tackle, and we had DJ Reeder got hurt last year, Josh Tupou opted out last year, and Ronnell Wren got hurt in training camp last year. So those are three of our biggest bodies, and like you said, we're picking guys up off the street. So yeah, certainly you're scarred by that to a certain degree. You don't want that to happen again, but at the same time, it's not just oh, we had to take Tyler Shelvin because he was the next guy on the list. I mean, he does some unique things that we're really excited about having him here. And he, I think he used the opt out season well to clean up his body. I think he got his weight down a little bit. He showed up in good shape at the pro day. And, we're really excited to see, him come to this level, get NFL coaching, obviously coming from one of the best programs in college football as it is, but we really think the upside is high with him.
And it helps when somebody you pick has carried your quarterback off the field after a victory at some point before. Wait, but by himself, by the way, like didn't need a second person. No, just I got it.
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it does not hurt at all that he's got the relationship with a number of guys that we have on our team. So, you know, he's coming, I think he's from Lafayette, Louisiana, so he's coming a far way from home, and it just adds to the comfort level hopefully that he'll have here, and hopefully it'll make that transition to Cincinnati that much smoother.
What did you like about Donte Smith?
Oh, he's extremely impressive. I really liked his tape this year, but he was playing down in the 280s. He had a bunch of COVID, quarantine type issues, and only ended up playing in one game. So you had to go back to 2019, and the weight, there's the weight discrepancies there, and then he shows up at the Senior Bowl at a higher weight, and then even higher at the Pro Day. He shows up at 305. But extremely long, quick feet. The guy at the Senior Bowl was one of the better offensive linemen there in some of the one-on-one pass rush stuff. I mean, he can mirror guys in pass protection. He's also physical. He can accelerate his feet on contact. So the upside is extremely high with him. you know, we like some of the guys that we've added to that offensive tackle room. You know, who knows if he'll push. We're hoping he comes in and pushes the guys here year one, but certainly if not the rookie year and we don't have the need and don't get nicked up, knock on wood, at that position. He's a guy that we're extremely excited about his upside for the future. And he certainly has starting traits. And if he can put it all together and, you know, keep that weight up, you know, up above 305 range, he's got a chance to be a really good player.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Are there a lot of examples of guys that put on, especially at that level? I feel like, you know, you're normally in college playing at the weight that you can play at and still be who you need to be fast enough or whatever. Is there a lot of examples of guys that just put on the extra 20 pounds or whatever they need and it really takes them to the next level that you guys maybe cited when looking at a guy like that?
There is, yeah, and that's part of the scouting process. You know, we kind of each guy's unique. He's coming from East Carolina, you know, not a Power Five program, but also not the smallest school in the world. And you know, we communicate these things as scouts who say, hey, this is what we're getting from, you know, this is where this guy's coming from a nutrition standpoint. This is what his personal character, his family background is. And we kind of develop a game plan for putting this guy in the most successful situation, you know, to be able to make an impact as quickly as possible for us. So that's communication between the scouts, the coaches, the nutrition staff, the strength staff, our player development people. You know, it's kind of an all hands on deck approach. And that's our job as scouts to describe to the rest of our staff here, you know, maybe where a guy could use a little bit more support or maybe where he's been successful at in the past. And no two guys are the same. So each guy kind of has a unique and detailed plan. And that's something that I think we've done a good job with over the past couple of years.
That's fantastic. I got to tell you, though, I don't think he's going to have trouble keeping the weight on if it had anything to do with his draft party, because we did the Zoom with him afterwards. And it looked like the most badass cookout I've ever seen. Like, you could see the smokers in the background, all these two. I was like, man, I wish the smells could come through the Zoom on this one, because it looks incredible down there. It looked great. Ticking off the last few that you guys went through on day three, obviously McPherson from Florida. We talked with Darren about him the other day. I mean, you know, just his distance that in some of the ways that he kicked. Obviously Darren was a big fan of Evan.
Yeah, I was with it was myself, Darren and Zach were down there at the Florida Pro Day, and we were blown away by his workout. It was you know, as up there with as good of a kicker workout as I've seen at a Pro Day for sure. The ball jumps off his foot, you know, gets a ton of rise on his kicks, and his kickoffs are tremendous as well. Did some phenomenal things with onside kicks, getting creative there. The people at the school really like him. He's got a confidence about him, which you like in a kicker. You know, he's not mentally weak or anything like that. And we've got some good sources down there. You know, I know Darren had talked about Shane Graham, who he and I talked to down there at the Pro Day, and then the rest of the staff at Florida really likes this guy. He jumped on my radar. Honestly, I didn't know he was going to come out early coming into this season. I didn't know he was a guy that was going to come out as a junior. But I was at Florida's opener against Ole Miss at Ole Miss, and I believe he hit a 55-yarder in that game, early in that game. And that was when he, like, really, really first jumped on my radar week one this year of, like, you know, I better start tracking this guy because he's got a real big-time leg. And you know, just throughout the process, he continues to impress you, you know, kind of culminating with that pro day. I visited with him a little bit after the pro day and enjoyed talking to him. And we're just, you know, we're excited to have him. That's an important position that can win you a lot of games. You know, that can be the difference. The difference in multiple games in your win-loss column. So he's a guy we're excited to add there.
Well, how do you guys go into discussing, and how did you talk through the strategy of when to do that? You know, I mean, you guys were one of the primary teams still in need of a kicker. I mean, but it's like, okay, do you do it? Do you wait? Do you decide, there's a couple of them and we could do a priority free agent? Do you wait, say, well, we're going to wait and see what the board really looks like at that point? Or do you always kind of have in mind, especially once you guys made that trade, hey, that's the time when the first kicker typically comes off the board. Let's just kind of have an idea that that's when we'll do it. I'm just curious how the strategy plays out with a position like that.
There's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, you've got to look around the league and you know, see who maybe has shaky kicker situations, or you know, it could be a contract situation as well with the kicker. You look at the interest level around the league and get a feel for the buzz on Evan specifically. We thought he was the head and shoulders the best kicker in the draft, and really the only guy that we felt good about drafting at any level. And then, you know, you're at the pro day. There's a ton of special teams coordinators at the Florida pro day. So you're looking around of teams that could have a high level of interest in them. We ended up acquiring the two additional fourth round picks. So you address some other needs there. And then, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's the guy that we wanted. We didn't want other people to make the decision for us and try to get too cued and get patient and maybe miss out on the guy. It's similar to the situation that I'm talking about when you look at the draft board and there's depth and groupings at certain positions. When there's only one guy that you feel really good about, you go get your guy. I think that's my philosophy on it, you know, and and kicker's similar to quarterback that way. There, you know, there's only one of them on your you know, on the field, you know, playing and on that rep, and you know, whether you have to take them a half a round higher than maybe you thought you could have got them. I think when there's a guy that you target, you go get him, and we're happy with the way it played out.
Trey Hill from Georgia, what did you what do you see as far as development factor with him?
Trey's a good player. He, you know, he's got center guard flexibility. He's been starting down there at Georgia primarily at center, but he played some guard as well in the Arkansas game this year. I know I remember off the top of my head. Believe he's a 2.5-year starter for him. I'll tell you what, the deal with him is he had bilateral meniscus cleanup after the season. You know, missed the last two games. And his testing numbers athletically were not great at the pro day. But when you watch his tape, this guy's a sudden, quick guy for a big body. He was 319 at the pro day, but he was playing up in the 330s. And this guy can get out of his stance and cut people off in the run game. He's quick sliding laterally in pass pro. There's suddenness and twitch in his body that maybe you wouldn't see in his pro day testing numbers coming off of the surgery. And just like just a little scouting nugget that makes me feel good about him. When I talk to you know, people I trust on Georgia's staff, they told me, they raved about how good of a basketball player this guy is and how much bounce he has, and he can dunk with ease at 330 pounds. So you go to the pro day, and his trainers advised him to not do the jumps coming off those meniscus deals. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be a different deal if you would have you know, if he would have been fully healthy and had a full allotment of time to train for that pro day. I think his numbers would have been better, because I strongly believe that when you evaluate his tape at Georgia, he moves around a lot better maybe than those numbers would suggest. He's smart. He's a high character guy. He's tough, and he's long. and he's got versatility to play all three interior spots. So we were very excited to get him in the sixth round. His tape is better than the sixth round. I feel strongly about that. But you know, maybe because of those the knee cleanups after the season, and as a result, potentially the testing numbers not looking quite as good, he was available to us in the sixth round, and I think the guys got a chance to really compete for us and add to that offensive line room.
You sold me on him. I like it. Chris Evans, I love this pick. I'm fascinated by this pick in that his pro day is off the charts. I mean, it's like the relative athletic score, I don't know how close you guys follow that, is like one of the rarest ones they've ever had at the position. His Senior Bowl obviously was great, but he just didn't play a lot at Michigan. And I'm curious how you guys, was it a matter of we need to answer that question with Chris Evans? Like, why didn't he play? And or were you guys kind of figure out the answer at the end of it maybe was we don't really know and we don't care? I'm just curious how the evaluation went on a guy like that.
Yeah, our scouts did a great job of digging. You know, when you look at the stat line, obviously there's some questions to answer. And then we see him at the Senior Bowl, and he's running routes, he's getting singled up on linebackers and safeties, and breaking guys off. He's got great hands, and then he goes and blows up the pro day. We already had information from their staff that he was going to test extremely well. So what you see at the Senior Bowl adds up with the testing numbers. Then our scouts, Andrew Johnson and Bill Tobin, Bill obviously has a heck of a relationship with their head coach up there, Jim Harbaugh. And Andrew did a ton of more work behind the scenes. We just felt really good about this guy. He got lost in the shuffle after the academic dust up that he had. But he showed perseverance. He showed, I keep talking about drive and determination with these guys. You know, he could have hung it up. He could have went and transferred to a smaller school and, done whatever he needed to do. But, he was, I think it's been put out there that he's working multiple jobs. And, you'd have to get a direct quote from him. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm sure it was a humbling experience for him. And then he comes back and he's down the depth chart a little bit, but he's clearly more talented than that. And to get a guy like that in the sixth round with our second of the two sixth round picks, we thought the value was phenomenal there. And I'm really excited to see him. I think his best football is potentially ahead of him.
I'm really fascinated to see how he looks when kind of given the chance. Wyatt, yep. Hubert. From Kansas State. You know, you guys, I want to do a story on this, and I'm going to have to do some research on it. There aren't too many teams that have had more success in the seventh round than you guys have, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years, between Fedge and Auden Tate alone, not even getting some of the other guys. But what did you like about Hubert, and is he the latest in the line of seventh round contributors that you guys seem to be uncovering?
I hope so. I'll tell you what, we really had to stay true to our board, and he just stuck out like a sore thumb. He was clearly our highest graded player that was still there in the seventh round. It's a similar conversation to what I was saying with Trey Hill, where the tape is better maybe than some of the measurables, some of the explosive testing that he put up at his pro day, and not the longest guy in the world in terms of arm length. But Christian Sarkisian, one of our other scouts, put me on to him, early on during the season. He fell in love with his tape, and he was like, hey, this guy's a real guy. You need to get another look at this guy and cross-check him. And I love this tape as well. I mean, he plays with his hair on fire. Another guy we're talking about with extreme urgency and physicality. Really productive as well. Ton of sacks there at K-State. And then he went to the Senior Bowl and did some really good things as well. They didn't have quite as many big bodies there at the Senior Bowl on the interior D line. So I thought those guys at the Senior Bowl did a really good job of kind of showing off the versatility. And you could throw Cam Sample in this group as well, where they put some of these defensive ends and allowed them to kick inside and rush over the guard. and show their prowess as interior pass rushers. So Wyatt showed some versatility there, whereas he was a little, you know, primarily an edge guy, you know, rushing from the outside at Kansas State. You know, he would kick inside at times, but him and Cam both were primarily edge guys. And, you know, they showed the ability to rush from the interior at the Senior Bowl. And then you interview the kid, you absolutely love him. He's all about football. He's, you know, like I said, extremely intense, physical, high effort, high energy guy. And, you know, he's, you know, you're looking at other positions. You're like, you know, maybe we've already addressed with, you know, going in the seventh round, we've already drafted six linemen. So you're thinking maybe that's not the best fit if you're drafting for need. But I think we've done a really good job recently of drafting the best player available. You know, it's similar to how we took Marcus Bailey last year in the seventh round. He just stuck out on our board as being the, you know, clearly the highest graded player available at that point, and that's what Wyatt was, and I'm glad we ended up with him. You know, it's a situation where if you had guys with equal grades, maybe you go with more of the position in need, but this guy was a notch or two above, we thought, the other guys we were considering at that spot.
Well, it was a fun few days. You guys have earned a rest whenever you're allowed to do that. I'll talk to Duke and make sure that he gives you a couple extra days for dealing with me. And, you know, it's congratulations to all you guys, everybody on staff over there. Y'all do incredible work. And you deserve some time off. So I hope you take it.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
All right. Much thanks to Mike for joining us. Fantastic conversation. Great insight. Sold me on Trey Hill. I'm officially on Team Trey Hill, and I want to see him dunk. and so I'm really good stuff. I hope fans enjoyed it, and we're back on track now. So we'll be back before you know it, and we'll be back here. You'll be back hearing our opinions before too long.
I just want to thank Mike again for doing this. I know a lot of people probably think that this is like December 26th for Santa Claus or like April 16th for an accountant where they just put their feet up and relax. And to some degree, that is the case. But Mike and Steven both, when they were jam-packed in the middle of this, carving some time out to talk to me down at the Senior Bowl and now to do this long conversation with you for the podcast. Just really appreciate those guys and their willingness to put their insight and their thoughts into this whole process.
Yeah, currently, you know, finishing up working through undrafted free agents and aligning up their rookie minicamp and all that stuff. Still work to be done. We'll have to hit him up for a 2022 mock draft here before too long, too. I'll come back to him on that. But hopefully he takes some time off because he deserves it, along with everybody across the league, all the scouts across the league. That's not just Bengals-centric. Those guys, man, they grind pretty hard, so they deserve it. All right. We will be back. We'll be back next week, and we'll be back to dive further into things. The schedule is on its way. You know, but we've got plenty of content that's going to be popping up on The Athletic all week. And, you know, there's always a chance for an emergency podcast, Jay. There's always a chance.
I think there's going to be some free agent signings this week. Not necessarily Bengals, but we're going to see some veterans sign in this week. And it could be with the Bengals. There could be something emergency worthy.
You never know. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll talk to you next time when you hear that podcast growl.